Pod.
Rugby Pod.
Hello and welcome back to the Rugby Pod. I'm Andy Rowan. Big Jim and Gertie are with me as usual. We're going to have a full debrief on the British and Irish Lions' first test victory over the Springboks. Then we're going to take a look ahead to the crucial second test. Plus, we'll be heading back inside the Lions camp once again, this time to have a chat with scrum half Ali Price. So settle back, enjoy, and make sure you've subscribed to Spotify.
Sweat. You mean armpit tears of weakness brought about by poor deodorant choices? Say goodbye to that salty river that floweth from your underarm with Old Spice Swagger Antiperspirant. Made for 24/7 sweat protection with daily use and an undeniable smell of cedarwood and lime. Giving you the confidence you need to quit your job, move to a remote island, and spend your days frolicking with dolphins. Old Spice Swagger Antiperspirant. Shop Old Spice now.
Your spring is about to get a lot more power with the Home Depot. Get gas-like power from mowing, trimming, and blowing with the Ryobi 18-volt OnePlus system starting at just $89. Mowing power that can take on a third of an acre with one charge. Trimming power with up to 2 hours of runtime. And blowing power with 110 miles per hour of clearing force. All on one interchangeable battery. Get cordless gas-like power for the entire lawn with the Ryobi 18-volt OnePlus system. Only at the Home Depot. How doers get more done.
How's your week been, lads?
Unreal. Straight in. Hell of a week. It's 1-0. It's 1-0.
It's coming home.
Well, statistically, if you look at it, if you win the first test, it's coming home. I've had a hell of a week, guys. I have been back doing what I do best. Smoozing, interacting, drinking, eating, training. Basically, I've been away from the kids. And I've been out of the house. I was down in London last week twice. I was doing an activation, a barbecue versus Bri for Now, who are streaming the British and Irish Lions games with Matt Dawson and Francois Lowe, two lovely human beings. Just love being around people again. So that was part of the week. Andrew, we were down at London Welsh Rugby Club doing a fan zone piece for Rugby Pass. And then I was at the game.
Well, you weren't at the game, were you?
Yeah, I was at the game. It felt like I was at it. I was at the Pear Tree in Edinburgh with the famous Grouse. So working.
Busy.
But I enjoy company of fellow humans, testosterone-fueled. Not necessarily alpha, because Andrew, you know, now your testosterone levels have gone down since you put on 10 stone and you're over 40, but I just like being around people. I've enjoyed this week.
I just hope that with all that work, you said you're earning money, I hope you're going to take the family on holiday at the end of the Lions series or something. Are you going to treat them for anything, or is it just, nah, back to school kids?
I've booked a holiday.
Oh, go on.
I'm going to Ibiza for Andy Rose Stag, it's booked.
So not family orientated at all, just lads.
No, well, I bought Becca Rucksack today from John Lewis, so she's buzzing off the back of that. Nice. The kids have got a colouring book. And
that's all they need.
What more, exactly, what more can you do? What more can you be, Andrew?
I hear you,
There does feel, and it's ironic that the Lions games are being played with no fans, but it does feel like there's an air of normality. However that may look going forward, or however that may have looked in the past. For me personally, and it has been an up and down 18 months. As we know, we're not going to go back and bring the tone down and go through the archives of how poor the last 18 months has been, not just for me, but for everyone listening. But it seems like there's light at the end of the tunnel, there's sport on. And again, yesterday being Sunday, I sat with a group of lads, mauled together. We've given them a shout out on the podcast before. They're cycling from John O'Groats down to Land's End, group of rugby lads, raising money for Doddy, raising money for Hambo. And it felt right. I'm amongst these lads that have been cooped up in their house as well. They're out raising money. I'm there. I'm not too sure by me being there if that adds to any more money, but it adds to the energy in the room. And I'll tell you what, I was just chatting to them and it was interesting to listen to their questions, Andrew, because they love the podcast. They're big listeners. All they wanted to talk about was Bush and Conkers. That's all they wanted. They weren't interested in the insights of the game. They wanted Bush and Conkers. And I'll tell you what, Andrew, I bloody delivered and I gave it to them. Of course I did. I gave them the 15, I gave them the 23 of Conkers and Bushes, and they went away on their bikes to head back down south, and they were happy.
Lovely. Well, I'm glad you're happy, Jim, because I've had a tough couple of days.
Talking of Conkers.
Well, no. Well, Stones, really, as opposed to Conkers, but Saturday night, I'm like, oh, what's that? Turned around, looked at the missus, said, have you just stabbed me in the back?
Gout.
No, I've got a shooting pain down the right-hand side where my kidneys are. I've been in bed for a couple of days. Kidney stones have absolutely wiped me out.
Well, that's what I said, Andrew. Stones and conkers.
There you go.
Well, the only way to get rid of kidney stones, because I'm a philosopher, is to weed them out through the conker, is it not?
It is, James. It is. There are other treatments available. I've got to see someone on Wednesday. But my God, I spoke to my doctor on Sunday evening, and she, and I'll say this, she said, if you have kidney stones and you pass them through your urine, it hurts more than giving birth to babies. And I'm like,
no,
don't tell me that. But to all the women out there, I was told by my female doctor that a man passing kidney stones goes down into the groin. The pain is meant to be excruciating. So I'm not looking forward to that. That'll be me over the next sort of 24 hours. And do you reckon that's the truth? A man pissing out his kidney stones is going to be more painful than giving birth.
I'll be honest with you. I don't want to talk myself up here, but I probably wouldn't flinch. But I don't want to put your medical records out there. And I don't know whether your doctor has seen you when she pulled the foreskin. I mean, when she looked at you last and did the examination. I'm telling you now, there's not everyone would be in that much pain peeing out a stone unless you've got a conker. So you've done yourself an injustice there, Andrew. Or you sat at home, you've got the holiday blues, you're feeling vulnerable, and you're happy to put on record that it was like giving birth at the weekend. Now, I'll just reiterate humbly, I wouldn't flinch myself.
What do you guys make of the first test?
One for the purist, the first half. Anyway, what do we make of the first test? Well, it's amazing we won. Let's put that out there. South Africa, absolutely fact. Let's get it out there. In the second half, they look absolutely bollocksed, if we're going to speak candidly. I didn't think we played that well. To be 12-3 down at half time, it could have been worse. I think we got the rub of the green with the referee. Yeah. I thought that the subs made a huge difference when they came on. I thought that tactically we played very well in terms of the kicking game. What about the bomb going up in the air? Straight for Cheslin Kolbe and Duane van der Merwe, my old piece, chasing him. I mean, I thought tactically we played really well. And it's huge. Let's put the headline out there. It is absolutely huge to win that first test. And I'm loving, and I've seen on social media, the fallout, and Razzie's on Twitter, if that is really him. I'm absolutely loving it. Some people get annoyed with it. This is what it's about, is it not? It's like the Lions winning a game in South Africa, the first test. The build-up's been immense. We didn't know whether we were going to get a game. We've got a game. Feel sorry for the players for them not being any fans. Nonetheless, we are where we are. And, you know, that's a massive win. A massive win. And it shows you with the build-up that South Africa have had and the COVID cases that they've had and everything else that's going on there, that even half-cooked, they ain't far away. So you're thinking this next test is going to be an absolute ding-a-ling. I mean, ding-dong.
So there's some big moments in that first half where, you know, we were a bit naive. A few penalties. Tom Curry gave a couple. Elliot Daly gave a couple. And then two things happened at half-time. Warren Gatland just dropped his kegs, showed his nuts and said, you guys need to get yours out in the second half and turn this around.
No, Mako got his out and everyone walked out.
Oh, yeah, maybe, yeah. But the South Africans changed their whole front row at half-time, and I still don't get it. It was just such a change, wasn't it? And when you've got dominance, I never understand a preset plan of changing a front row at a certain minute, and we ended up winning the kicking battle in the second half, winning the aerial battle, and that was the game, wasn't it? It was the most physical game of chess you could ever see, because a couple of times that the Lions chucked it around, it seemed a bit harem scarum. You only have to look at Diolandi's try that was turned over for Cheslin Kolbe's knock-on, thinking, what are we doing there? But when we got our tactics right, kicked on the money, kicked to compete, yeah, we dominated the airwaves in the second half. And I think, you know, that and South Africa's discipline, that which just went to pieces in the second half, was the big differences. And obviously Warren G getting his nuts out at half-time.
What'd you make of the two TMO calls by South African Marius Jonker?
Oh, you're hoping not to talk about TMO decisions, aren't you? And let's be honest, they were all very close.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? It was very, very close. And let's get it out there, Andrew. The footage and what we were trying to see on TV was really poor. Like, I don't know, for whatever reason. I know it's on a world feed. Sky are obviously showing it. So it was difficult to build an idea of what's happening. Like, they had an aerial view that they showed for the second TMO decision, but they didn't show it for the first one. The first one was the kick through from Am to Willie LaRue, and it was fractional. And I've, you know, when I watched it, I thought LaRue was behind. You know, there's stuff going around on social where people are freeze framing it and they're drawing lines all over the pitch. I did feel for the match officials in that. I don't think refereed the game that well around the breakdown. I thought we let a lot of stuff go. And you're just hoping that these headline decisions aren't what dictate the game. In hindsight, he probably got it about right. The one with Chez and Colby, we all saw that. We didn't know whether he was going to go back for the knock-on in the air or the slap down in the air or however you want to look at it. But that's probably the worrying thing for the Lions, that if it wasn't for them small decisions that were huge decisions, then it could have been very different. But, you know, like Gatland said, you get the bounce of the ball. You win some, you lose some. And that's what's going to make this second test so good, because it was so close. There were these decisions. South Africa are going to be better.
Yeah, I think that what the big one for me is just how it was communicated, because the on-field decision for Willy LaRue's try, he was given a try. So on-field decision is try. Then the letter of the law is there has to be clear and obvious evidence to overturn that. And the, Marius Jonker's wording, I think he was saying something like, it's a tight one, but I think he's just in front. So it wasn't clear and obvious. So we got the rub of the green there, the big one for me. And, you know, I'm actually not too fussed about Willy LaRue's try, because the South Africans scored not long after that anyway, didn't they? So, you know, when you've had one disallowed, then you score not long afterwards, it kind of cancels the first one out, because you wouldn't have been in that position necessarily to score the second one. The big one for me is, and he's a friend of the show, Hamish Watson, that is a yellow card all day long. And at 19 points to 17 to the Lions, I know Andre Pollard still gets a penalty and misses it, but you've got the last, however long it was, 10 minutes without Hamish Watson. That's a big difference, I think. You know, it's definitely not a red card. Let's be clear about that. But for me, as soon as you lift the leg over the horizontal, even though there wasn't too much power in sort of Willy LaRue being put down into the ground or driven into the ground or whatever you think, the letter of the law, that's a yellow card. And they didn't check it. You know, I'll go back to Jim's point about the coverage. We weren't hearing some of the TMO conversations with Nick Berry, which, you know, you're watching BT Sport, and I know they're coming off the world feed and there's issues because Sky are doing it from, you know, their studios here, and, you know, they're basically reliant upon what's being given to them from South Africa. It didn't make out the clarity that we all needed as fans and as pundits watching the game, the clarity required on decision making, when some of them in the first half, you couldn't hear him, could you, Marius Jonker? So, and the big thing is, I tweeted about it, World Rugby have put him in a horrific position, because he's now getting buried by South Africans. You know, we've seen in the press people calling him a coward, Marius Jonker, and it's just ridiculous. You know, Gats has gone out a few days before the test series into the press and said, I'm not happy, it's a disgrace that, you know, World Rugby have put a South African in charge of being TMO for three tests without having a contingency plan. I get that. Actually, World Rugby have really got to take a look at themselves for putting him in that position.
How good has Rassie Erasmus's social media activity been? Or is it Jacko Johann?
Who is it? I'm loving it. I'm absolutely loving it. Like, who is Jacko? It is a bit weird, though, isn't it? You've got one of the best coaches in the world, the best coaches who have ever done it, having won a World Cup. He's running the water on, his mask down by his nipples, and he's put on a bit. Let's put it out there. Not that that matters. He's been comfortable the last couple of years. He's not feeding anyone any water. Like,
he's carrying one bottle on, to be fair.
The lads are absolutely dying for a drink, and he ain't feeding any water at all. He's just feeding messages with his mask down by his nipples. And then he's hitting social media. It's all a bit weird, but I'm loving it. I'll be honest. I like all these interactions. It makes me laugh. Yeah. It makes me happy. But he's calling out. He's calling out the referee. He's calling out some of the Lions' challenges, and he's posting it, rightly or wrongly, the challenge on Chez and Colby from Ali Price, which we're going to chat to Ali. We'll maybe ask him about it. It was. He took him out in the air, I thought. It's more around Mako picking him up. So Mako picking Cheslin up after, plops him back on his feet. Razzie saying it's unsafe. You know, there was some stuff in the lead-up to the game last week. I reckon Gats is a silent assassin on Twitter as well. I reckon he's there scrolling through, but he's not got a blue tick. I bet he is. But that's what it is, isn't it? It's like Razzie, he was humble after the game. He said, best team won, no excuses from their side. There could have been 100 excuses, and there wasn't. But whether or not World Rugby allow it to carry on, in terms of Razzie calling out the Lions posting clips, I mean, why not? It's, you know, if they lose 3-0, the egg's on his face, isn't it?
What is the difference between Razzie whacking something on Twitter and you know, airing his views that way to Warren Gatland airing his views to the newspapers in a press conference? Is there much of a difference? I know you go into sort of another degree by showing clips, but it's just another form of media, isn't it? We want to see this between the coaches, don't you? It's, you know, it's the only rugby event that's going on right now by the Olympics, and you know, the world is focusing on this. And I think you look at it and you think, I think it's brilliant. You know, they're not characters that are dislikable. They're not slagging each other off. They're not going in too personal or anything like that. It's just having a bit of fun in the press. And, you know, sometimes Eddie Jones does it. And sometimes we call him out for some of the ridiculous things he says. But, you know, these two, I'm quite enjoying the entertainment, because actually, you know, the entertainment of the Lions tour so far hasn't been that great in terms of the rugby on the field. You know, it was all building up to this big crescendo of the test match. And, you know, the test match was intense and all that. So it wasn't played at a pace. I reckon me and you could have handled that pace, Jim. Maybe not the physicality, but, you know, it wasn't the best spectacle to watch as a game of rugby, was it? A lot of kick tennis, a lot of big hits, a lot of tackling, you know, very little ball in hand. And that was the way this first test was always going to be. So if you're going to have a bit of banter across Twitter, and Razzy Erasmus is there doing that, and Gats is going in through different media channels, what's the difference? It's a bit of fun, and I don't mind it.
I need to call Razzy out, though, because I've been following him, then unfollowing him, and then following him, and I must have followed and unfollowed him 100 times so he sees me. So there's some visibility. I don't know if he's hitting verified or not, but he's not picked up the hint that I'm keen for him to follow me. I tried to get him on the podcast before the Lions tour as well. Let's just say he replies saying, mate, you're a legend, and then nothing else. Didn't hear a whisper off him. Didn't hear a peep, lads, I'll be honest. If I'm being honest, I didn't hear a peep off him. So, Razzy, we're calling you out. If you carry on tweeting and don't follow me, I'm calling you out next week, calling you a joker. There you go, have it.
Oh, you are, Jim, you are. You are. That's why you were the enforcer.
Well, speaking of enforcers, Marrow.
Yes.
Massive game from him over the weekend.
And I put myself in a bit of a hole, didn't I, Andrew? As you know, as I was tweeting, let's talk about it. That's how we live our lives. I tweeted that Peter Steph De Toy, best forward in world rugby right now. And then, obviously, Marrow was doing what he was doing. It was off the back of Marrow getting absolutely monstered by Eben Etzebeth, and then Marrow turning Eben Etzebeth over, and then getting a line-out steal, and then getting a turnover, then another turnover, then another turnover.
He played bloody well, didn't he?
He's a big game player, Andrew, and this is what I mean. Yeah. When you look at the refereeing around it, he got away with quite a lot, as Eben Etzebeth did as well. Marrow plays well every week. Every week he does something in the game, or he does a number of things in the game which you're like, this guy is world class. Yeah. But there's always the element of him giving away penalties and whatever.
Did he give any away at the weekend? No.
But arguably he could have given away penalties. So it kind of goes for him and against him. But he's that dominant in what he does. And this is, we were chatting last week, Goody, in the build-up to the game, and you're talking about Adam Beard, how well he did in the lead-up to the test matches, and you're thinking, right, he can be in because of what he does around the tie. No one does it better than Marrow around the tie. No. And when you're doing them things around the mall, when you're trying to steal the ball, when you're close to your try line trying to steal the ball, and everything's in favour of the attack, that's why Marrow gets pinged. And some of the stuff, you know, when he's knocking hands out, you know, he's knocking the scrum half's arms. Some referees let you get on with that. And Nick Berry let them get on with that for both sides. Yeah. He didn't referee the breakdown as strictly as we've seen it refereed in the Prem, for example. So Marrow was in his element in that sense. And his battle with Eben Etzebeth, and we obviously had Eben on the podcast a few weeks ago in the lead-up to the tour. You know, we're talking about two out of three best second rows in world rugby. Do you know what I mean? Of the modern game. Brody Retallick's in that mixer as well.
Alan Jones.
So, top 10 in Northern Hemisphere. I'm joking. Top 15 or 20. Like, Alan Wynne-Jones was good.
You're horrible.
If you look at the output of Marrow and Eben on the pitch, they are light years. They're ahead of the game. But what Alan Wynne-Jones, you see his, like, he's a leader, isn't he? Any decision, he's there. He's close to the referee. He's slowing the ball down. He's hard as nails. So I thought Marrow and Alan Wynne-Jones, as we were predicting who was going to play last week, obviously the team got leaked out. that's the right setup for the team. And then you throw in Courtney Laws as well. But if you're talking about enforcers, I thought Eben looked brilliant as well. He was attacking. We'll chat to Ali Price and ask him if he could even smell the size of Eben's arms coming from the blind side and the way that he plays. But no, absolutely loved it. Like them two, you know, they are world-class locks and I did enjoy it. And I'm biased because I'm one of the enforcers as well.
Well, a couple of things on that, Jim. Firstly, you're talking about outputs. Who was the British and Irish Lions top tackler at the weekend?
Marrow.
Alan Wynne-Jones. 10 tackles.
Is that it?
Yeah. Yeah, it's all he needed. It's all he needed. But he led the way. He led the way as skipper. And secondly,
dominant tackles?
I don't know about those stats. I haven't gone that okay. there.
Well, I'm just asking. I'm just asking.
I don't know about those stats. I haven't delved that deep into dominant and soak-up tackles and Jim Hamilton tackles because there's three brackets, isn't there? But what I will say, why is Marrow so good? Why is he so good? Because he learned from the best. He learned from the absolute best, George Cruz. He learned from George Cruz and Swinno down at South. No, he learned from you, Jim. You were his mentor, weren't you?
Well, what happened with me and Marrow, and I'm happy to put it on record again, if I wasn't so shy towards the end, they would never have fast-tracked him through. So the listeners out there, if you've not listened 2 or 3 years ago, you're welcome. If it wasn't for me being so crap, they would not have fast-tracked Marrow Itoje through, and arguably, he'd still be on the tour, but would he be as good? It's a rhetorical question because we don't really know. And I'm sat here retiring in a box room on my own talking crap on a podcast. But nonetheless, we're both successful in our own rights.
Yeah, you say that, Jim. It was interesting, isn't it? Because loads of different selection sort of points came up last week. I thought Jack Conan as well answered loads of questions around his selection. People were shocked that Faletau wasn't involved in the 23. Conan, I thought, was brilliant. The whole back row, Courtney Laws was the big one as well. We were chatting to Stevie Ferris on Thursday with Rugby Pass. And
Plodder.
Good mates with Stevie. Yeah, good mates with Stevie. Lot of time, lot of respect for his opinions. He says what he thinks, which I love. He called Courtney Laws a plodder, didn't he, Jim? And he's like, I don't
but
see
he
that
backed
selection.
It up. He backed it up with stats. He convinced me.
He didn't convince me because I've seen a lot of Courtney Laws and he just goes around banging boys for fun. And he carried well, got turnover. Courtney Laws was brilliant. It was very close between him and Marrow for man of the match, I thought. Obviously, Marrow won it in the end. But yeah, Courtney Laws, I thought, was phenomenal. And the game was perfect for him, wasn't it? Yeah, the physical sort of close quarter battle where, you know, Courtney is immense in that. You know, he's probably the best in the world as a six doing that sort of stuff. Him and probably Peter Steph de Toy as the two sixes.
Well, it speaks volumes of the game that you guys have pretty much just talked about the forwards. Was there anyone in the backs or anything that stood out for you with either back line?
I mean, first up, opening play of the game pretty much for the Lions. Elliot Daly, how are your ribs? I mean, I'm looking at it going, that needs checking because he's flown. Amma's absolutely flown out the line, smoked him. And I'm thinking, we've got to see a replay. Like, we hardly saw a replay for 5 minutes. And I was just gagging to see the replay, thinking that he'd gone really high on him.
Ballsy to do that.
Yeah, very, very. Because that's, mate, you get that half an inch wrong and it's night-night, no biscuit. You got a red card and, you know, you're 2 or 3 minutes into the game. But my God, what a shot that was. That made me think, geez, I'm so glad that we're out of the game for a long time now, Jim, because that was brutal. Elliot Daly's a strong boy.
Yeah, it was a class start. I think from the backs, Goody, and you'll be better placed than me, I thought Duane van der Merwe was standout. In terms of the pressure that he would have felt going into that game, I thought he outplayed Chesson Colby. Obviously, the game suited Duane. He got a good touch early on in the air with the ball. I know it went forward, but with the up and under. His kick chase, his physicality, I thought was brilliant. Anthony Watson was good. For me, the difference for the Lions was the bench that came on. I'm not saying that the guys who started weren't good. It was a kicking fest at the beginning. They're on the back foot. You know, they're under a bit of pressure. But I'll be honest, I thought Farrell was really good when he came on. I reckon he'll start this week.
Do you reckon?
I reckon he'll start. If Bigger's not fit, because Bigger's doing the HIA protocols and can't do contact till Thursday, I think Faz will start at 12 and Henshaw will move out to 13.
So if Bigger's fit, you think Faz will go in at 12?
Yeah.
Yeah, interesting. Interesting. I think Bigger 100% deserves to start again on his own performance. You know, what about the nuts on him to slot the penalty to go ahead? You know, from the touchline as well. You know, and
having
people are talking about
the one before.
Yeah, and people are talking about Alan Wynne-Jones as the skipper making that decision to go for the corner. You have a look at the replay. Dan Bigger doesn't even go to Elam and Jones. He gets the ball, hoofs it into the corner before he made the decision, I think, Dan Bigger did. Maybe it's come off the back of what they spoke about at halftime, but there was no point was Dan Bigger thinking, Alan Wynn, should I go for posts or should I go? He got the ball and I saw it. It happened in a millisecond. Bang, he's put it in the corner. I'm like, geez, that's ballsy.
Yeah, because Gat said, I listened to him after because I love my ruggers. He said that they said at halftime, because Bigger missed that kick and Elliot Daly missed that long kick and they'd spent no time in the 22, they said, kick is the balls to the corner. And then Luke Cowan-Sickie, you've not hit a barn door in the first half, but we're trusting you to hit this one. I put double top on Twitter, but it wasn't double top in hindsight, but it was competed. And the fact that it is a bit of rugby noise, because South Africa competed in the air, that's why the Lions scored that try. Because they're Thank in you. A compromised position. So you're welcome.
You rugby pig.
I blow your mind, eh?
Yeah, you do. Yeah, going back to the backs, it'd be interesting selection this week, but... Yeah, I mean, I thought Van der Merwe was quality. Disappointed we hardly saw Chesney and Colby, did we? You know, you want those players on the ball, but that was the nature of the game. Anthony Watson, again, agree with you, Jim, he was good. And yeah, you know, Ali Price, whatever Gat said at half-time, they all turned it round, didn't they? Because they changed their kind of focus. They, you know, carrying the ball more, playing through some phases, and that put a load of pressure on South Africa. And you know, Ali Price getting the ball away from the breakdown quicker, you know, and just simple patterns really got us... some field position, momentum, and South Africa lose their discipline. And ultimately, that's what won us the game. That and our kick chase and you know, aerial skills, where we sort of dominated them in the second half, was the difference. And the backs were a massive part of that.
Well, we can go inside the Lions camp now and have a chat with the man who starred for the British and Irish Lions at the weekend. Scrum half Ali Price joins us. How are you, mate?
Yeah, pretty good, thank you. Good weekend's work. So, yeah, spirits are good.
Ali, what's better? The fact that you won a test match and you started a game for the Lions, or that your social media has gone up 50% in the last 3 months. What?
Jim, we're not all as shallow as you, mate.
definitely the result on the weekend. Most players would agree your first sort of test start would be the biggest game of your career, and it definitely was for me. And to get over the line with a win as well, it was a pretty special day.
I'm sure it was, and we'll come on to the game in a bit. But first and foremost, I just want to chat about, I can hear that strong Scottish accent coming out, and you're like, Jim, are you born north of the Hebrides in Swindon as well?
Yeah, the east coast of England, Norfolk, is where I was born.
Give us a snapshot of your backstory, because I know we joke about it, and it's one of four nations now, because you're a British and Irish Lion. I can't say that, so I basically just have to justify my Scottishness everywhere that I turn. Just give us a snapshot of why you've got an English accent, play for Scotland, and now you're an absolute legend.
So yeah, grew up in England. My dad was born in England. My mum was born in Edinburgh. So that's the Scottish link. And then, yeah, when I finished school, went to Bedford Blues Academy, who had an under-19 team. Was playing an academy game for them, and there was a sort of Scottish exile scout, if you were, watching a match against Cambridge University, actually, and got an email off the back of that inviting me to sort of Scotland under 20 trials up in Leeds initially, and just it kind of went from there, to be honest. That was when I was like 18, so I had 2 years at 20s. The first year didn't really go anywhere, and it's gone from there. I ended up in Glasgow, and the rest is history, I guess.
Can you imagine, Ali, the amount of lads that are saying, watching you at the weekend, being like, I was better than him. How is he there? I was better than him. He was at Bedford. He was like playing Cambridge Uni. He was there. He was this. And now look at it.
There probably are some, to be honest. But look, this is how it's played out, so I'm not complaining.
Let's just talk about your rise then. And we're going to go back before we talk about the test match. Obviously, you've been exceptional on tour, all the romance about getting on tour, and then it gets to the week of the test match. Conor Murray, the week before, is named as captain, which obviously means that potentially the only place up for grabs is a bench spot. Then Alan Wynn-Jones comes in. A lot's been spoken about your form. We can't get away. Conor Murray, world-class player. He was class when he came on as well. But how was it for you, learning that you were going to make a test day debut as a starting nine?
It was pretty surreal, to be honest. We were all sat in the team room, and in all the previous games so far, Gats has just gone up the front with his notebook, put his glasses down, and just read out the team basically. And it was on the Monday of last week that we found out And you could tell it was, you could tell there was, everyone just wanted to know. All the players in the room, you guys would have been the same when you played. You just want to know where you stand and you can deal with it. And he came in and there was no reading from his notebook. He kind of, there was a few slides up on the projector at the front. And he kind of started by saying that it's not a closed door after this first team gets announced. There's, you know, in New Zealand, there were changes between tests and the tour before in Australia. Same thing applies. Not to switch off. If you're not selected, don't get in a huff. You know, it's one team, one squad. You know, we're all working in this together. And kind of everyone's looking around, just being like, just announce the,
put the team up.
Just tell us what it is. And yeah, then it came up positionally on the screen at the front, starting with the front row. So slowly but surely each unit of the team got announced. And then I seen my name above Biggs. And yeah, so surreal. Couldn't quite believe it. At the same time, then it was like, right, I need to have a brilliant week. You know, learn my stuff, know exactly what I'm going into, game plan, and just do myself justice. I tried not to get carried away with it because I felt like being named was the easy bit. I had to just, like, it to myself, I had to put in the performance on Saturday to kind of prove to myself that I could do it, you know?
I'm trying to think back to our careers when something similar would have happened, probably getting picked for England or Jim for Scotland or whoever it was. It's really hard to actually understand from the outside those meetings. Are there loads of looks or glances between the players? Because there's probably very few players that thought they were definitely going to start because it was so tight selection, wasn't it? So, yeah, the reaction, do you look down to the floor and just have a little moment to yourself? Do you look around at other boys and they're giving you the nod? You know, it must be so exciting to be in there. But what was the reaction?
Yeah, obviously the names all went up. It was silent and people digest whether they're in or not. Had a moment and then Gats kind of said, right, well, that's it. And we were off to training straight after, actually. And I think it kind of shows how tight this group is now. I think, like, everyone's a decent bloke here and everyone's been getting on. And the first guy that came up to me after we all stood up was Connor, and sort of shook my hand and said, like, well done, mate. Like, we'll let's do this kind of thing. And then got on the bus and Gareth's just opposite me on the bus and he stood up and was like, look, congratulations, mate, well done. You know, like, whether people would have been disappointed as and people are obviously happy, and but it didn't matter. You know, we're all in it together. I mean, it was pretty special.
Yeah, I would have been moaning into my coffee, I tell you. If Marrow and no doubt. Alan Wynne-Jones got picked ahead of me, I would have been moaning into my coffee. let's talk about the build-up then, because we're obviously here, and I think I messaged you or Hamish and said the atmosphere absolutely buzzing. So in all the bars in Edinburgh, I'm sure London was the same. I don't know whether you get to see or hear that noise, but there is an air of normality back here in the UK and Ireland. Is it weird there? Do you know what I mean? Because are there people out and about? Is it like turning up to the stadium, there's no one there? I know they're very strict on COVID. So without bringing the energy down, how is it when you're in the stadium warming up and the build-ups and stuff?
Yeah, they're not as far on as what it is back in the UK. I mean, where we're based through the week, we're in Hermanus. I don't know if you guys are that familiar with it, but it's about an hour and 20 away from Cape Town. It's a small town and we're obviously in our bubble here at this hotel. Just go to training and come back, and like the facilities and the hotel here is great, so it's not too much of an issue. But then when we go to Cape Town, obviously it's very much in for the game, and again, the hotel's just us and we go from there to the stadium. So yeah, and I think in terms of the lockdown here as well, I mean, we don't drive past any bars or built up areas going to the stadium. So you don't really, you don't really see any, there's no full bars. There's not people out on the streets, you know, with flags and chanting and all the rest of it, like it has been back home. In a way, it's helped us focus, and we're just here to do a job almost, you know, and it's brilliant that people back home are able to enjoy it with their friends in the bars and stuff.
Let's talk about the game, Ali. A lot of the games that you've played and the games that you've really stood out in is where the game has been fast and you've been on the front foot. Now, people watching the first half, especially, unless you're a rugby purist like myself and a non-expert expert, you understand that there's a tactical element to it. How tough was it around the breakdown, the pushing and the pulling, the ball bobbling about, and also implementing a kicking game and trying to make sure that that's on point instead of reverting to trying to run everything? I mean, was it as tough as it looks around the breakdown, the physicality? Were you shot by it? I mean, Eben was coming from the blind side and hitting you and stuff like that. How was it? How was it playing?
Yeah, it was tough. I don't think either team really got much attacking front football at all, to be honest. But at the same time, I think well, we expected that. I'm sure South Africa were expecting it as well. Was speaking to Biggs in the week and leading up to the game, and test matches like that, they're more like chess games in a way. It was who was going to blink first on or make an error that enabled the other team to get further up the field. South Africa, on their run up to the World Cup, you know, they've got a massive kicking focus and winning the aerial battle and then back in their defence when a team gets bored of it or tries to overplay. And I think that's something that we were very aware of going into that first test, was to not get bored or lose patience within that. You know, they would have their moments in the game, but we didn't want to feed them anything cheap and easy because we overplayed, for example. And so I think personally, I had a good grasp of that going into the match, and I sort of knew what would be effective for me was just executing my basics. It's probably, I know I'd had a lot of front football on the tour so far and been able to sort of challenge and all the rest of it. But my basics had also been pretty good, I think, for me anyway. And that was part of the reason still why I'd got selected. So I wanted to make sure that I nailed that. But yeah, it was definitely competitive and physical. But I think, you know, we all expected it to be like that, I think.
Yeah, definitely. And obviously, first half, things weren't going as well as perhaps the Lions would have wanted. 12-3 down at half-time. We've been chatting on the podcast prior to you coming on. I basically said that Warren Gatland must have dropped his trousers, got his nuts out and said, this is what we've got to do to win, boys. How was that half-time speech? Because ultimately, it was a hell of a turnaround, and it came from pretty much your box kick out of the 22 in the start of the second half, which was a massive momentum shift, wasn't it?
Yeah, I mean, our discipline in the first half wasn't great, which fed them the 3-6-9-12. We missed a few opportunities at points, could have been slightly different. But even at 12-3 coming in, we were still in the arm wrestle. You know, it wasn't too big a gap that you're like, oh, we've got to chase the game here. And at the same time, going off what happened in the South Africa A game, the way that they looked or appeared to tire in the second half and towards the end, you know, we back our conditioning and we've managed to get, well, pretty much all our games in on tour. You know what I mean? In terms of match fitness, we're in a good spot. And I think at halftime, we were in the arm wrestle. We just had to not gift them cheap points with ill discipline and still stick to the game plan. And like you said, I think from the kickoff, managing to get the turnover around halfway, big momentum shift that allows us to get into their half. And especially in that second half off our exiting from our own 22, you know, right throughout the second 40, we're able to put pressure on them around halfway and win back the ball. And ultimately, I think that's what led to the win.
Is there much chat, Ali, on the pitch? Banter between the teams? Is anyone screaming at Razzie to put his mask on and to feed water to the boys? They're thirsty. Do you know what I mean? Because there's obviously a little bit after, isn't there? There's a bit before. I don't know if you've seen the stuff on Twitter. You must have seen it going around in camp. Yeah. Is there any chat? I mean, because there's no fans there. I mean, is anyone giving it large ones?
No, sorry to disappoint you. There wasn't anything on the field, to be honest. I'm not really one to say much anyway on the field, but there are... I generally keep quiet and try and do my job, but I think everyone was so, it was a physical game. Everyone was getting into each other physically, and there wasn't any real words or banter flying around, to be honest. A couple of pushes here and there, but that's about it.
Well, I saw Eben, I'm sure I heard Eben say, like, take that, bro, or something like that to you when he clipped you on the feet or something. So just tell him, if he does that again at the weekend, tell him you'll put Big Jim on him. If he does that again, I'll sort him out next time I get to South Africa. He'll be shitting himself.
I've got a bodyguard back in Edinburgh, but he'll come and get you.
The problem is your bodyguard's got spaghetti arms, so I'm not sure what Jim could do with that these days. Talk to us about Faf then, because obviously, you know, he's the fulcrum of their team, really, in terms of energy. You know, first and foremost, give him some banter about his hair. Did you talk to him about his highlights, because they looked a bit blonder at the weekend? But playing against him, you know, you're actually very similar players in terms of your energy, aren't you, and how you go about your business. A good battle playing against him. You enjoyed it?
Yeah, really enjoyed it. You know, I love to play in these games where I'm challenging myself against some of the best in the world at my position, and that was no different on the weekend. You know, he's proven that he's a quality nine, and I guess it's a team's job to try and stop a player like him. And I think the pressure we put on around the breakdown and when he was trying to exit, I think you know, anything you can do that to put a player like that off their game can only be effective for us. And I think on the whole, we managed him pretty well, to be honest.
And what about other lads in the squad, Ali? Has Owen spoke to you about me or anything like that? As you said that he was firing balls at my face when I was at Saracens, as he mentioned it. Have you built a relationship with anyone that you thought you might not have?
No, Owen's not mentioned you, Jim. Sorry to disappoint.
You can't let it go,
don't
Jim.
Mention me. Don't mention me. Don't put him off his game.
Now that you've mentioned it, I might say I spoke to Jim last night.
He's a fucking joker, mate. He's a fucking joker.
I wouldn't be able to single out anyone, to be honest. We've all mixed really well. There's a few guys that when you play against them, you think, God, you're a knob. But when you actually meet them and get to know them and you're on the same team, proper nice blokes. For me, that's something that I didn't really know how it would go. You know, I think like anyone, you'd be quite nervous coming into this kind of squad with the quality of player. But you got to just dive right in, haven't you? And it's been good to get to know everyone on more of a personal level, I guess.
Yeah, you need to stay close. I was chatting to Dan Bigger. I don't know whether he mentioned it on the podcast or not, but apparently he's going to business with George Cruz and they're setting up some property empire or something. So it's the ones that you don't think, Ali, that you need to stick close to that could make you a multimillionaire.
The dynamics of the tens you're playing with, obviously you're going to know Finn Russell exceptionally well from Scotland and previously Glasgow and stuff, but actually Dan Bigger and Owen Farrell are very different tens, aren't they, in terms of their intensity and how they manage a game. Have you enjoyed sort of getting to know different players in terms of the tens? You know, Finn's a very laid-back character but very switched on, and you know, it tries to compete in every play as well, but they're very different characters, aren't they? How have you found that sort of dynamic?
Yeah, they are. Biggs and Faz, very knowledgeable. I think it's helped me as well in terms of there's different ways to play a game, and obviously you guys would know you're always learning as a player. Biggs demands what he wants from the guys around him, but at the same time he's very cool. He's very calm, and yeah, Finn's very laid back, and you kind of know the style you're going to get with him. At the same time, I think the way Biggs and Faz play in terms of their kicking game and organisation and management of especially that sort of middle third, which is becoming more and more important. I found it really interesting. I feel like it's helping my game as well in terms of working with other players with different styles.
And how's the build-up, Ali, looking this week? Is it different to the first week because there's a few battered bodies? Obviously, Biggs is undergoing a HIA. So we won't be able to do contact or train till Thursday. I don't know, you know, obviously we're just going based on the info that we know, but is it a slightly different test week, or is it a case of trying to build up the intensity straight away, or kind of look after everyone and get there by Thursday, Friday?
I mean, in terms of this Monday compared to last Monday, we did a similar session, a few games to kind of get the legs going again, and then a bit of organisation towards the end of the session. Plays are already sent out in terms of any changes to set piece plays. So that's just for the boys to learn kind of throughout this evening and ahead of tomorrow, which again is going to be our main training day again. So far it seems pretty similar, to be honest. Biggs aside, I think everyone has pulled through pretty well. And today, everyone kind of back training and getting the legs going again.
And just before we talk about the rest of this week and the game at the weekend, one thing I forgot to ask, were there a load of beers in the change room afterwards? Because, you know, as much as we know it's a 3-test series, it's been a tough tour for you boys in terms of socially, you've not been able to go out to bars and stuff, but celebrating wins like you did at the weekend is very important as well as a squad, isn't it? And I know Gats loves a beer, especially with his top off. Were there a few beers after the game as well in the change rooms and back at the hotel?
Yeah, a couple on the bus on the way back, because obviously we stayed in Cape Town the night before, but then we went back to our base here in Hermanus straight after. So a couple on the bus and then back at the hotel. A few fines got dished out, a bit of a fine session, and just enjoying each other's company. Like you said, obviously first game, so there's still two more massive games ahead of us, but you've got to celebrate these moments. You know, it's a special occasion. You've got to have a few unwind after the match and enjoy each other's company. It's just as important, I think.
Any of the fines, decent ones that you can let us in on? We saw Lewis Rees-Summit with the shave in his head for the lightning bolt. Must have been some decent ones after the game.
Let me think.
Who's getting hammered? Ken Owens has bought his missus on tour. I heard that one.
We're all in a bubble for 2 months and he's got his wife. Were there any good
is ones? It different crack, Ali? Is it different crack because you're in it? Like, do you know what I mean? Because you can't get out. I mean, because, like, let's be honest, like, we're seeing the social stuff and wind of the pictures, but we're not seeing a lot else. You know, is there not a lot happening, really? Is that what you're trying to say?
Well, there's not a huge amount you can do. It's just us, and we're in this hotel, which is pretty remote, and that's all there is. A lot of the fines are if you're late for meetings, wrong kit. The coaches have been brought in on them as well.
So, Ali, it's a slightly different vibe to when I was Scotland's vice-captain, where if we kept it under 50, we were out in Opal Lounge, probably drinking 50 or 45 responsible drinks. Is it uber-professional? Like, is it like we're hearing about Bobby's Rope and stuff like that, but, you know, people listening to this and thinking about a Lions tour and stuff like that, is it just like because you can't go out and get loose, you can't go out midweek, there's not many stories that are going to come out of the tour as opposed to, you know, except for lads missing a birdie or whatever it's called. I don't even play golf. I sound like I know what I'm talking about. But is it just uber professional? Is it just like literally head down, get the job done, get out of there, and then hopefully have 100,000 followers by the end of it?
I think there is an element of that. Obviously, I wasn't on the tour in 2017. You know, from what I hear from the boys that were on that, it was different. There was a lot more traveling on their rest days. Actually, I believe in New Zealand, they didn't actually have a recovery day where they stayed in the same place till between the second and third test, I think. So there's been some positives in that. There's not as much moving around, and it's allowed our rest days to be rest days, and you can chill out,
eat,
play golf, which is handy. It is a bit more chilled, but that's the environment or the world that we're in down here in South Africa at the moment. I think it's helped us be closer together as a group. You know, we're all missing family and friends back home. But we know what the obviously the objective of this whole tour is just to win these three games at the end, you know, and we're at that stage. That said, you know, Saturday night we got back here and we were able to have a few drinks together, and as professional and intense as it is, it's also important to have nights like that where you can unwind and just enjoy each other's company.
Yeah, definitely. And has the rope come out? Have you been hit by the rope yet, Bobby Strigden's rope?
I've not been hit by the rope, but as you can imagine, it's been out and about. Everyone's seen plenty of the rope.
I'd do anything to get hit by the rope. Ali, before you go, are you feeling the love? I mean, I mentioned at the beginning, I was at the Pear Tree at the weekend. Every time I stood up, everyone cheered. Every time you touched the ball, someone cheered. So I felt like I was amongst it. But are you feeling it from back home or not? Do you get a sense of what it's like here? Social media, messages? Because there is a lot of hysteria now, and it probably does feel slightly different for you guys there. But are the lads feeling it?
I mean, from what we see online, I guess a little bit. But yeah, like you said, it's hard. It's hard to feel that over here because there's none of it. We don't go past any kind of built up areas where there's bars and people are out on the street and all the rest of it. There's none of that here, I think. But at the same time, it's great to see the sort of videos and the reactions of people back home, because ultimately, that, you know, we're trying to do it for them, make them proud and support us. And Matt Dawson actually sent me a video of Edinburgh after the game. I don't know what bar he was in, but
it was with me.
Was he? Yeah, I mean, it looked class. It looked so good. Once this is all said and done and everyone's back home and can enjoy a weekend out with their mates and that, I think it'd be nice to get back to some sort of normality anyway.
Yeah, we're going to get mobbed, mate. That's all I'm saying.
Less of the we, Jim. Less of the we.
Where are we going, Jim? You're taking me out.
Yeah, I definitely am. You win this weekend, mate. We are out. That's all I'm saying.
Just don't wear your brown leather jacket, Jim. Horrific.
All right, Ellie. Well, thank you very, very much for coming on the show, mate. And best of luck for the rest of the tour. And no doubt when you do finally get back here, you'll be able to enjoy some of that atmosphere.
Perfect. Thanks for having me, guys. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Ellie. Best of luck this weekend. Bring it home, son. It's coming home.
Cheers, Smiler. It's coming home.
Allstate wants to remind fans that mayhem is everywhere. Like when your fantasy league meets up at your house. Everything's great until the hot plate gets too hot for the tablecloth. Now your kitchen's up in smoke. And if you don't have the right home insurance coverage, the cost to fix this is anything but a fantasy. So switch to Allstate, save money, and get protected from mayhem like this. Not available in every state. Based on coverage selected. Subject to terms, conditions, and availability. Savings vary.
Top lad. Yeah, lovely guy, actually. Another Englishman that's gone up north, eh, Jim?
Mate, no, if this isn't England and Scotland, Andrew. This is the British and Irish Lions.
Yeah,
it's
you're
four
right,
nations
you're right.
Coming together. So, yeah, he's a top lad.
And you can see how much... Sometimes you look at the boys and you think they're the legends on the Lions tour, but you kind of get that feeling from him that he is soaking up every second of it and learning a lot from all the other players around him. So, mate, what a lovely bloke and hell of a story around getting selected and then playing really well in that first test. I hope he gets picked again this weekend.
It's class to have him on. You know, we're not going to get a load of stories and a load of banter off him. He's in the middle of a test series, isn't he? He's got a test match at the weekend that if they win, they make... Well, is it history again? Do you know what I mean? They're historic moments, aren't they, that they're going through. So, Ali, the guys at the Lions, thank you for giving us access. It's a treat to chat to him.
Let's get your predictions then. What's going to happen in the second test? Any changes that you'd make to the team?
Oh, yes. I mean, I don't want to be harsh, but front row struggled in that first half, didn't they?
I wouldn't be surprised to see Mako start now. I thought he was wicked when he came on. Fair play to him. Because he's been under a lot of pressure. Yeah. The fixes that they put in the front row, I just thought they were disciplined. They just hit and stuck. Wouldn't be surprised to see Hamish Watson start 7 ahead of Curry. Only because I don't think there was much in it. And Curry gave away a couple of penalties. I know Hamish Watson's tip tackle could have been a yellow. Maybe should have been a yellow. It wasn't. But apart from that, Conan, I thought was really good.
Played really well.
Spoke really highly of him. I don't know why you'd even swap him out. I wouldn't be surprised to see a few changes. I reckon there'll be a couple in the backs as well.
Yeah, I think backs is where it's at. You know, big one for me is Dan Bigham. You know, if he passes his HIA, love to see him start at 10 again. You know, the centre partnership didn't really work and you've got a few options there. Do you know, leave Henshaw at 12 and bring Chris Harris in at 13? You know, do you bring Bundy Aki in at 12 and shift Henshaw to 13? Or do you go Farrell at 12, which is what they were going to do, weren't they? They took Elliot Daly off, moved Henshaw to 13, and then put Farrell to 12 for about one play because then Dan Bigger gets banged on the head and goes off for a HIA. So then Farrell moves to 10, Elliot Daly comes back on, and Henshaw's back into 12. So, yeah, people calling for Liam Williams to start as well. It surprised me, actually. I thought Hoggy played all right. I know he slipped on one kick or whatever, but I thought he played reasonably well, Hoggy.
Yeah, I thought the back three... played really well. And that's the issue that you've got in the lead up to this. Like Josh Adams, is he not going to play now? Do you know what I mean? Is he going to look to mix it up? Would you play differently? I don't know. Like this is the hard thing, isn't it? Like the players that we're talking about, the centres, we never knew who he was going to pick. The back three, we didn't know who he was going to pick. Mm. So, and that's still the question mark now, isn't it? Going into this, because let's be honest, if you look at that South Africa back line, if they're fit and firing, and we did see glimpses of it, my goodness me. They're a better back line. They're more physical. They're more direct in the carry. Whereas ours, we're still talking about it now as non-expert experts. Do you know what I mean? Like we're trying to say, is our centre partnership good? You know, is the back three right? Whereas like you look at them and you're like, if they get it right and they're fit, they're class.
I actually thought at times the South Africans got lost in attack. Like it was, you could clearly see it. And you feel for them. They've played against Georgia and some of them played against the Lions for the Springbok A team. like the cohesion just wasn't there, was it? The Lions, I know they've had a load of easy sort of provincial games, but there was a lot more togetherness in how the Lions played, especially in that second half. Then you talk about the lungs of the South African boys who haven't played.
I don't think Pollard played that well. He was shaking his head when he came off, you could see.
Yeah, he had a little bang, didn't he? And I don't know, I looked at the South Africans, and if they don't win that first collision, and it's not Etzebeth or it's not Peter Steff-Tatoy or it's not D'Alande getting their nose through the contact and getting over the gain line, they don't really know how to attack. And that's when Faf goes looking for something. And that's where the Lions' defence, I thought, was phenomenal. While you look at both back lines and you go, probably on paper, that Springbok back line is potentially a bit better than the Lions' back line, I didn't see a lot from them. And Gats again going in the press and kind of saying, I don't know how much growth they can build in a week when they've not played that much rugby. And it's just interesting little snippets you get. So we'll see. The big thing is, and I said it last week, Yankees, if he has to play at 10 or if he comes off the bench, it's a massive step down for the South Africans in how they want to play. So that'd be a huge advantage to the British and Irish Lions if that was the case. So time will tell with selection this week.
Okay, shall we go through the team then, Jim? Do you want to name the forwards, your forwards, and Goody the backs?
Depending on Wyn Jones being fit. If he's fit, he'll play. I'm hearing that he's not. So I'm going to say they might go with Mako, because 2 years ago, he would have been first choice. If it wasn't for him getting pinged left, right and centre at the scrums, I would have picked him as first choice because he's proper. But he seems to have sorted that out when it matters, because that's what good players do. So I'm going to go Mako. I'm going to go Jamie. Because of the lineup. Yeah, I'm going to go Jamie George.
So you're going Jamie. I'm going to go Ken Owens.
Okay, so we're both agreeing on making a change, which is ridiculous because I had Cowan Dickey nailed on in the first test. Tyke Furlong, I think we both agree on that. I don't think we're even questioning that. And Marrow and Alan Wyn Jones, we're not questioning that. Going to say, will he change Curry for Watson? Yeah, I think he will. I think he's going to change Hamish Watson. And we'll know. By the time the podcast is out, the team will be selected because there was a mole leaking it out, someone they weren't happy. Let's just blame the chef or something from South Africa. But I think Hamish Watson, Conan at 8, and of course Courtney Laws will start 6 again. Do you think Hamish is
in? I hear you. Yeah, I hear you, Jim. I think that might be the change. I completely agree, James, with that back row. Courtney Laws was immense. Conan was immense. And there might be a like-for-like change with Hamish Watson coming in for Tom Curry and then Curry coming off the bench and being very explosive from that point of view. So, backs, I'm going to go Ali Price. Of course, I haven't just had him on the pod. I'm going to go Dan Bigger. I think he's going to recover and start at 10. And now this is the big one, the centres.
He's definitely going to move Henshaw to 13.
I think he's going Bundiaki at 12 and Henshaw at 13. Unfortunately, I think Elliot Daly probably drops to the bench, which makes it really difficult now because Duane van der Merwe and Anthony Watson on the wings, that's a big clamour for Liam Williams to start. I think Liam Williams might get a shout at fullback.
Oh, I reckon that Faz might start 10. Because if Bigger doesn't train all week and they'll put Bigger on the bench, agree with you, Bundiaki. I could see Faz at 12 maybe, but let's go with Faz at 10, Bundiaki 12, Henshaw at 13. I'm happy to say it, Andrew. I don't think Elliot Daly played well. Okay, didn't get the kick that he needed to get, but he's been brilliant on tour. Back three, I think he's going as is.
Do you think?
He might put Liam Williams at 15.
Who's winning the second test, lads?
Ah, Lions, mate, by 10. Lions by 10.
I think South Africa.
Well, it's interesting, isn't it? Because people talk about, you know, the Lions are better off now because it's not being played at altitude. Second and third tests were meant to be both played in Joburg, weren't they? But they're now in Cape Town and the pitch wasn't great. In the second half, the Springboks looked absolutely shot to pieces at times, fitness-wise. So actually, it's probably doing them more of a favour to not play the games at altitude, because altitude burns your lungs after about 30 seconds. So while had things been normal, they'd have been primed for altitude because that's where they play at and that's what they've been used to. These boys look absolutely shot to bits and, you know, we'll see how much growth they've got in them in a week. So, yeah, I'm going Lions because it's kind of weird saying this. Like, Jim's just gone with South Africa. How good would it be to see it 1-1 and go to the last test?
Jim, talk to me why you think the Springboks are going to improve and win the second test.
Because they have to.
insight.
Yeah, of course. I've given you everything there because, but they do. They have to, don't they? Like they're the world champions. They're at home. Like it is not, you don't want to throw desperate measures, but when it comes to sport, and they weren't that far away. That's what I mean. They weren't that far away at the weekend having not played. I think in order for everything they're going through as a country, that's what they latch onto. Do you know what I mean? I think that they're going to latch onto that emotion. Whether or not that's enough, it's going to be close. And it's going to come down to a yellow card. You know, does Hamish Watson get yellow carded for a similar challenge this weekend? Do you know what I mean? Does the TMO feel under pressure to give the try this week to Willie LaRue? So I think as a neutral and as a fan, it would be good to see it go down to the third test because it gives us another week, doesn't it, of drama and emotion in the build-up. You know, I wouldn't be surprised if the Lions win. I think the quality they've got, the build-up they've had has been seamless apart from a couple of COVID cases. They seem tight. You know, whatever team they put out there, we're speaking about the back line, not really playing that well, yet they still won. First half losing 12-3, still won. But the romantic in me, and I do like a spoon every Christmas. I genuinely do. I do like a spoon on a cold winter's night.
With Beck?
And a pillow. Yeah. Yeah. She said she wants more. I'm not a cuddler, Andrew.
No, I'm cuddly though, so send her down my way if you want.
Oh, I couldn't imagine. Are you all hairy like a hairy like a hairy beanbag? I'm gonna go. If I'm going to give my expert opinion, I'm going to say 1-1, Lions take the third test.
And there's been a bit of other rugby news outside of the British and Irish Lions. Gertie, what do you make of Eddie Jones losing John Mitchell from his coaching staff and him joining Wasps?
It's an interesting one, isn't it?
Surprised?
I am a little bit, actually. We spoke to John Mitchell at the start of the Six Nations, didn't we? He signed a new contract at the start of the Six Nations to go through to the World Cup. So it does surprise me, but also it doesn't surprise me. For reasons that we've spoken about on this podcast before, the turnover in coaches has been monumental, hasn't it, since Eddie took over. And listen, everyone knows that's the way Eddie likes to keep things, you know, freshen them up. And it's been to the detriment of the England team at times, you know, when obviously Scott Wise-Mantle left and it was kind of just finding people to fill in roles. And it's ultimately, we've said it on air, Eddie Jones, when you're the boss, it's your way or the highway. And, you know...
Does what John are you saying Mitchell, with that then, Andrew?
Let's be honest. Why has John Mitchell left?
Why do you think he's left?
He's gone to Wasps. Now, I don't think it's going to be about money. So it's not going to be for a better deal. It can only be because he doesn't want to work in that environment anymore, or Eddie doesn't want him working in that environment anymore. And we have no clue as to why. So we're just going to blame Eddie.
Is he going to move to Cov or not? Because he apparently lives in South Africa. I mean, imagine living in South Africa or Australia.
Lives in Durbs.
Lives like, in Durbs. I'll tell you what. Well, similar to Coventry, you've got the canal with the dirty nappies and the trolleys in there. So he wants it.
He's getting an apartment overlooking the Cov Canal. That's what I'm saying.
Historic.
It's a great signing for Wasps. However it's come about, and Wasps put a press release out saying once we found out that he was available, you know, a coach of his experience and everything that he's got about him. And other people have said how many jobs that John Mitchell's had in the last 5, 6, 7 years. It's quite a few. But, you know, Wasps definitely the beneficiaries. Why he's left, we'll never know, because John Mitchell isn't the sort of bloke to come out if it was his choice and say he's not going to give Eddie both barrels in the press. He's not going to tell anyone anything like that. But also, you know, maybe Eddie wanted rid of John Mitchell as well. But who knows? And until someone says anything, the history is that Eddie Jones, a lot of people don't want to work for him anymore because of how hard to work with he is. And the benefactors of this are Wasps.
Right, let's finish things off with the good, the bad and the ugly.
Yeah, we're going to start off in Tokyo and the GB Sevens team. Great Britain Sevens have won their first two games at the Tokyo Olympics without conceding a single point. They've got their quarterfinal tomorrow when the podcast is out, so we'll see how they go there. But they get a mention in the good and they're through to those quarterfinals. We're going to go for a few Lions people now, James, and we're going to start off with a man you've written off constantly. But that man, Alan Wynne-Jones, the skipper, led from the front. He made the most tackles for the Lions with 10. So I think his shoulder's okay. And he led from the front in his 10th consecutive test for the Lions. So he certainly gets a mention in the good. Two other players that were outstanding on the day, Jack Conan, who we spoke about, but also Courtney Laws, 8 carries, 33 metres made, 9 tackles and 6 lineouts won, showing that he is the all-court player that they need at 6. Fantastic operator, both sides of the ball. Mara Toji, just huge, wasn't he? Learned everything he knows from Jim Hamilton. He also learned everything not to do from Jim Hamilton. And luckily, he doesn't do that very often. But he was phenomenal at the weekend. 5 carries, 8 tackles, 3 turnovers, 1. And some of those turnovers were very key at moments in the game when things could have gone against the Lions. So he was an absolute menace throughout.
I love how you're backing this all up with stats. This is the first time you've done this. You're hitting me with stats like you're convincing me again. I told you earlier, I'm easily manipulated. The minute you start hitting me with 1-1 equals 25, I'm sold. Like 69-6, 9-69. Like once you start throwing these around, you are convincing me.
But the good this week goes to Warren G and the Lions in general. Your mentor, regulate, James Hamilton. Halftime, 12-3 down. He drops his kegs, shows them his spuds, gave the boys everything they needed to go out there and win that second half and win the test by dropping his kegs. Apparently he's got massive nuts. And he got them out on the table. He said, lads, show me your nuts. So Warren Gatland, you were an inspiration to the boys at halftime, and that's where you get the good this week.
He just regulated them.
He did.
See what I've done there? Do you know where that's from? Warren G regulated.
Warren G. Yeah. The bad, Eddie Jones, losing another assistant coach with John Mitchell going to Wasps. I should have mentioned Wasps in the good because they got John Mitchell. Yeah, I will. Wasps, you get a mention in the good. But yeah, bad news for Eddie Jones. Another coach leaves his coaching ticket and he's got to go looking again. Maybe Richard Cockerell. Imagine those two working together. Can you imagine that, Jim?
No.
In one word, no. What else is bad? World Rugby are going to get mentioned the bad. Firstly, for putting Marius Jonker in a difficult position, making him TMO at the last minute. Where was the contingency plan? So he's now TMO for all 3 tests. But basically, he was put in an awful position because he was damned if he did, damned if he didn't. The South Africans are now hammering him for some of the decisions he made. And Warren Gatland obviously went at him before the game and is now saying, yeah, I was pretty happy. So it was a no-win position, but World Rugby, you should have done better. But the bad this week has to go to South Africa's discipline. They lost it. They did a Jim Hamilton. Lost their discipline. 14 penalties conceded in the game, which was the difference in the end. The South Africans lost their discipline, lost their way in the second half. The Lions came good. So South Africa's discipline, you get the bad this week. And then the ugly, 2 bits of ugly. And it's basically journalists. South African journalist Mark Keohane calling Marius Jonker despicable and a coward. That gets a mention in the ugly. But the ugly this week goes to Neil Francis, who was rightfully sacked for his disgraceful comments about Marcus Smith from his role with the independent.ie and the podcast that he was on. So Neil Francis, hang your head in shame.
Thanks, Gertie. Thanks, Jim. Thanks, producer Tim. And thank you very much for listening. Don't forget to check us out on YouTube and make sure you head on over to Spotify and we'll see you there.
Rugby Spod.
Spotted pod.